afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I am Erin. Erin Ryan.
You're my fake husband today?
Yeah, I am.
All gender bending aside.
It's Debbie Bacigalupi, and I'm just so excited to be here. I was born in Redding, right here in Redding, California.
Well, there you have it.
And this is where all, you know, a lot of people around the United States hear about the California wildfires is in this area.
And we're the hub. Yeah. Well, we kind of got overshadowed by the Paradise Fire that was slightly south of us. But, yeah, we've had a lot of natural disaster up here. And let's just be clear.
Natural?
Not according to climate change. So, as much as Jerry Brown wanted to tell us that, no. Gavin wants to tell us that. So this program will be airing in April of 2019, just in case some political things have changed and we air the thing in the future. Our guest today is Tom DeWeese. Our sponsor this hour is Team Power. They are the local Kubota and John Deere tractor dealer. They serve Shasta, Siskiyou, Tehama, and Trinity counties. They're a certified dealer for tractors, utility vehicles, turf equipment, and they also carry a full line of implements to help you tackle any job. I think that's implied. Dealership offers well-staffed parts and service departments. They've got in-house and road service repairs, and you can find them at 530-226-9226. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, just south of Phil's Propeller.
I remember when the city of Mount Shasta, that's where I spent the first 3 months of my life. Just recently, they tried to pass legislation where you could not mow your lawns because of global warming.
Oh, well, recently, like in the last week, they changed their garbage service. I was just chatting with a lady yesterday. The city council thought they'd save a bunch of money, and so they changed garbage service. But the garbage service is coming from over an hour away, so you have to have your cans out at like 5 o'clock in the morning. Little snag up there, because now, and everyone told them, they're like, we can't do that, because nobody can put their garbage out the night before because they have bears. And the city council said, oh, no, just, you know, put a rock on your garbage can lid. Yeah, so the next morning they all woke up there. The city of Mount Shasta was covered with garbage because, imagine that, there were bears.
Oh, that city has been
so... there are a lot of bad decisions being made.
That city is so taken over, as in most cities across the United States, which Tom DeWeese...
They are in love with marijuana right now. That's their big thing.
Yeah, and not Tom DeWeese, but he's not in love with marijuana.
No, the city of Mount Shasta.
I was just going to say, Tom DeWeese, who's our guest today, knows...
We tried to tell him he was going to be broad-brushed.
Tom, we promise, we're getting to... This is like the opening for Tom. It's really a good one. Because Tom is hearing all over the United States, city by city, what's happening.
Dumb decisions.
People are calling up Tom saying, what do I do, what do I do, what do I do, Tom? What do I do?
It's the potheads. So Tom's one of the leading advocates of individual liberty, free enterprise, private property rights, personal privacy. Oh, imagine this. Back to basics education. I'm not even sure we can define that anymore. And American sovereignty and independence. So we really appreciate him being on with us this afternoon while we chat about pretty much anything you got on your mind and things that you think are a big deal. I listed your website, the American Policy Center. And, gosh, you guys have been doing that for 30 years, leading the fight for American property rights and sovereignty.
And, boy, do you have a wealth of information, Tom DeWeese.
We do. We've got an extensive archive on that website of articles I've written over all those years. And it really gives you a history of where a lot of this stuff comes from and, you know, where it began and who was behind it and so forth. And so you can, you know, spend the rest of, you know, your weekend going through the, you know, the entire thing. But, yeah, we've been doing this for a long time. And for a long time, we've been called nutcases, conspiracy theorists. I've been awarded tinfoil hats. The Southern Poverty Law Center has done 4 separate reports on me as one of America's hate groups. And so I have all the credentials to, you know, stand up to this.
See, and in our world, that means you're probably a good guy because, you know, nobody is maligned if they haven't done anything.
Yeah, I actually, when I speak, lots of times I will say, after they've given these wonderful, wonderful, rousing introductions, I will get up and say, I've also been called a domestic terrorist by the Southern Poverty Law Center, and I will get the loudest applause.
You get a second standing ovation.
Yeah, <right.
laughs> You know, I heard this term, and I love it, Tom. It's someone said accidentally. She accidentally said it to me. Debbie, you have been called a conspiracy therapist. And she meant to say theorist. And I was like, that's it. I am a conspiracy therapist. I am, because we're out there telling the truth, Tom DeWeeks.
Yeah, I mean, all I ever do is quote them, and then I get labeled the nut. Now, what's that say about what they're saying?
Yeah.
Whose mouth it's coming out of, I guess.
So what's your favorite topic? I mean, there's so many things that lie under United Nations Agenda 21, Sustainable Development. And the listeners of We the People Radio are pretty, I would say, versed on what Agenda 21 is, because in this rural part of America, we're experiencing many things.
We've got 10 years of archives. If they're not smart about it, they can get smart.
So what do you think is like the number one issue out there that we as people who love freedom and liberty are facing? And how relevant is it that people like get involved in stopping? Because I have a feeling what you're going to say is not good news. For example,
what makes you think that? Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, when I do speak and I see audiences, you know, if there, say there are three or four of us speaking in the conference. I know you've been there, Debbie. And you begin to look at the audience, and they're looking down, and they can't take any more. All this bad news, bang, 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 bang. And of course, the question always comes up, what do I do? What do I do? And the whole Agenda 21 issue, this whole deal is so vast, so massive, that the average person just can't wrap their head around it. It's every aspect of our lives. It's where we live, how we live, the energy we use. It affects our children. It affects having children, apparently, now. So on and on, people, their jobs and everything else, people can't wrap their head around it. They start down a road to try to fight, and then something else comes up, and they get diverted to that direction. Pretty soon they give up because, well, there's just no hope. And what I try to do is show them there is hope, and I try to bring it down to a very simple means. The truth of the matter is that the sustainable development, smart growth, Agenda 21 policies have a kryptonite. And if this kryptonite is used, it can't be implemented. And that kryptonite is private property protection. If you protect private property rights on the local level, you can stop these policies from being put in place. And so that's what I have focused on the last few years. The book I wrote, Sustainable, that's the focus of it. I can go into all kind of things, population reduction and, you know, the education system and all that, but really, if we focus on that, and we've put a lot of tools together to help people, to do that, and we have begun to see some victories as we've done this.
I think being focused is super important. And just narrow in on, like when you go to city council meetings, right, you could just hone in on the private property issues, right, Tom?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I was in Minnesota last week, a couple weeks ago, and there was a city council lady there, and she was very proud of the fact that they had helped at least diminish some of the comprehensive plan that the community was putting together, and all they did was kind of stall some of the things for about 10 years. But she was really happy. Well, we were able to do that. I mean, talk about hopelessness in your voice. And she was revealing it to me in her gladness. And I said, you really want to shake things up? She said, yeah. I said, put the comprehensive plan in front of the city council and say, ladies and gentlemen, there is no protection of private property rights in this plan. And make them, they'll tell you, oh, yes, there are. You say, well, show me. Where are they? And no, they're not. There's no wording anywhere in any of these plans about protection of private property. And so...
Gosh, that simple. I mean, that simple.
Yeah. And I then have a plan. I've got a document on our website. It's called Resolution for the Protection of Citizens' Property Rights. I said, here's your language. Put it in front of them and say, put this in the plan. And watch their heads explode.
And that's just fun for everybody.
That's right.
All right, we have to take a really quick break here. Our guest is Tom DeWeese, and you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Here's a little kryptonite for you, Tom.
You call me strong, you call me weak, but still your secrets I will keep. Took for granted all the times I never let you down. You stumbled in and bumped your head. If not for me, then you'd be dead. I picked you up, put you back on solid ground. If I go crazy, then will you still call me Superman? If I'm alive and well, will you be there holding my hand? I'll keep you by my side with my superhuman mind. Kryptonite.
And isn't that about the way of it?
Well,
they want it all.
What shall we do about them? But I'm wondering if that song is about us. Like, what? How do we get him out of the way? How do we get Tom DeWeese out of the way? Because he's making too much sense and he's
causing problems.
He's protecting private property rights. Or is it? Can we turn it on them? What do we do about them?
Exactly. Well, hey Tom, where do you just see the property rights, the private property rights encroachment? It's just everywhere, isn't it? It isn't just in... I mean, sometimes people feel like it's just in their area.
Oh, no, it's every single community. Every single community in the country and the rural areas are under siege at the moment. When you hear your county commissioners, your city councilmen talking about a comprehensive plan and we're just planning for the future and all that sort of thing, that's what they're putting in place. And that is every single area of the country that this is happening. And what's feeding that are the grants from federal agencies, particularly from HUD and the EPA, Department of Transportation. What you have happening in every one of these councils and so forth are non-governmental organizations, NGOs, that many of them helped write the Agenda 21 plan at the international level in 1992. In 1993, Bill Clinton put together the President's Council on Sustainable Development, and the purpose of that council was to take these, what they call a suggestion from Agenda 21. See, it has no enforcement capability. It was just a good suggestion. That's what they tell us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bill Clinton's council was designed to take that away, to make it official policy. On that council were some of the same NGO organizations that wrote it at the international level, the Nature Conservancy, the Sierra Club, the Audubon Society, some others, and every agency was represented on there, every federal agency, and there were a whole bunch of corporate representatives there, too. These corporate representatives are able to use their advertising budgets and other policies that they put in place to make these things mainstream. And so that's the three-pronged monster right there from the President's Council on Sustainable Development, and that is how it got into every community. So now you have a lot of states then were lobbied by these same NGOs to put legislation together to demand that every community in the state do a comprehensive plan. Now you've got city councilmen sitting there thinking, what the heck is a comprehensive plan? And the same NGOs arrive and they say, don't worry about it. Got it all right here in a box for you. Got the money for you, too. You don't even have to think. Step by step by step, this is how they put it in place.
Make it easy for you.
Yeah. Absolutely. They've made it just as easy as it can possibly be. And and if a city council would stand up and say, no, we don't want to do this, we're not going to apply for that grant, those NGOs go to the media, they go to the people, and they start to tell the people, your city councilmen are denying you your tax dollars. If you don't take these grants, somebody else will get your money. And there the pressure is on.
I do remember running across that when we were fighting with people you know, Rosa Corey, people Aaron knows, Rosa Corey, mm-hmm. Michael Shaw, the One Bay Area plan, which was to merge 101 cities, 9 counties in the San Francisco Bay Area into the One Bay Area plan, with one plan for all cities, all counties. And I remember under as we fought it, and we were encouraging some of the city council members to not go along with this. They were saying, their complaint, Tom, was, well, wait, if we don't accept the money, like the Federal Highway Transportation Funds that is being used to implement regionalism, then our city is going to have potholes, and the cities around us are going to have their streets fixed.
Yeah, like they would use the money for potholes.
the big lie.
That's like saying they're going to take the lottery money and use it for education.
For schools, right. Yeah, that totally worked. And the pot money.
Yeah.
Let's go back to that.
What they always do.
The pot money is going to help us, too.
Yeah. It is on the level of when the school wants to put together a new bond issue and they want to get everybody to pay, you know, to approve it. And the first thing they say is, well, if we don't have this new bond issue, we're going to have to cut out sports. Now they've triggered every child in the school to go crying to mom and dad, they're going to cut out sports. And mom and dad, the only thing, by the way, in the schools that people actually pay for, you buy tickets to go see the games, and this is the tool that they use. It's always that kind of scare tactic that will get down to your heart the quickest. That's what they do. In reality, 9 times out of 10, the money isn't even used for that.
No, and I think we do see that in California, where our streets are just in, to use a popular term, deplorable condition. While we have the highest gas rates in, I believe, America. I mean, it's just so, you know, Tom and Aaron, it's just,
well,
like,
they're looking at raising the federal gas tax, by the way, just to throw more gas on the fire.
Well, this is another thing that they do.
Before they tax it.
You know, we have used the free enterprise system with fracking. Now, there's a popular term. But it has resulted in gas prices plummeting. So what do these guys do? They plot this way. Oh, gas prices have come down. Now we can tax it back up to where it was. And that, you know, that's immediately what they do. A sustainablest world. What
that's
they're
the
driving
only pothole
towards,
they want to fill.
They want you out of your cars.
Yep.
And the way to get you out of your cars, the most effective way, they won't have the guts to ban cars. The effective way is to tax the gasoline, keep the gasoline up to $8 or $10 a gallon, and then you won't drive. That is the plan. And so when the gas prices started coming down, it panicked them. And the solution is now we'll tax it back up there.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've effectively, let's face it, you see people driving around in these things. They look like a shoe. They look like a little shoe with windows in it. And you think, are you kidding me? If you got bumped by a Prius, you would be a goner. But, you know, that's how we're going to make it all sustainable. It's like, I don't know.
Well,
everything's on energy.
I took my niece, who had just graduated from Loyola Marymount, to Habitat 9, United Nations Habitat 9, and the conference name was Cities for All, which should be a big clue. Cities for All, that's what the conference
was.
It's like,
what about the people who don't want to live in cities?
And pushing people into cities, as we all know, is their ultimate goal. And, you know, up until that point, my niece, who college graduate, kind of thought as her aunt, me, as Chicken Little. Well, so for her graduation, I took her to Malaysia to go to this United Nations Habitat Conference last February, a year ago, or over a year ago. And finally on the last day, so she's suntanning and stuff at the hotel, but finally on the last day of the conference, she goes with me. And it was perfect, Tom. The one panel discussion she went with me was the one about transportation, which there are many, 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 many panel discussions on transportation, but this one was perfect because they said, and this will be the way we get people out of cars. And my niece loves her car. And so she finally,
for
after
now,
all these years, never seen a presentation I've given, says, oh my gosh, Aunt Debbie, they really do want us out of our cars. And so now, you know, Jessica is not going around like my niece is crazy. She is now going. Okay.
I decided not to wait until after college. I took my niece when she was 10, and we went on a little tour of Northern California. We went over to the coast and up the coast and around through Oregon and back down. And I took her on a government overreach tour. So we drove around and looked at all the ways that the government was making our lives hard, trying to boss us around. Over-regulating. So all the things that, you know, the flashing signs that tell you how fast you're going, really, I needed that because I don't have a speedometer in my car. And it just so happened there was like a whale that had gone up one of the rivers from the ocean when we were over on the coast. And the environmental people, you know, that are good at this, the agency people, were out there poking it with big, long rods.
Oh, to try and get it to
yeah.
turn around?
And we found out when we got home that it died.
Because they poked it too much.
Because they poked it too much.
Because they metal, Tom.
She
That's
was,
what they do.
She's
they
10
metal.
Years old standing on this bridge going, leave the whale alone.
That's what they metal. They have to, they have, you know, you collars on deer.
So you have to pollute the kids when they're a lot younger.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Well, they should have sat down with the whale, reasoned with it, drawn it a map.
Or just figured it was a whale, right? And it could figure it out itself.
Talk about its feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, like.
Well. It was man messing with the river that caused this. So,
right.
You know, in the beginning, when we started fighting this, and we said one of the plans was to herd people off the rural lands and into the cities, boy, that got me a couple of tinfoil hats from that one, that, you know, what a nutcase I was. And, of course, they're not trying to do that.
No.
And, you know, well, how do you do that? Well, the answer is you make it impossible to live on the land. And they attacked the timber industry and the mining industry, and now they are going full bore after the ranchers and the cattle industry and so forth. The I was in a meeting in Alamogordo, New Mexico, back before 2000, somewhere around there, and all these cowboys showed up in their pickup trucks, and in the back of those pickup trucks were not hay and things like that. They were file cabinets. They had all these files. These guys knew the regulations, hook, line, and sinker, because they had been pushed against the wall. They had nowhere left to go except to push back, and that's what they were doing, and they knew this stuff. They knew exactly what we were saying about what this was all about, because they were learning it firsthand.
Which is just pathetic and depressing. Hey, so got to take a really quick break here. Our guest is Tom DeWeese. You are listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
And it beats like a drum down in New Orleans.
I can't do everything, but I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just 'cause it's love. I'll find it everyone.
So except for the, you know, lovey-dovey part, that's a fun song. Hey, so, Tom, you're right on the front of your website, your latest article, Green New Deal Reveals the Naked Truth of Agenda 21. We'd like to hear about that and cows.
Yeah, I want to know.
But it's kind of all tied together.
Yeah, as a cattle rancher, Tom, something that I've been interested in that you have been, and I wish I were a part of it, was exposing this whole new global meat measurement that's going on in grocery stores.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'm just beginning to get into that issue and learn about it. I was invited to a cattleman's group down in Oklahoma, and I knew a little bit, but when I got down there, I learned a whole lot more, and I've got a lot more to write about that. I've just done a tiny little bit up till now, and I'm amazed by the response I'm getting on it, even for what I've done.
Well, but if you need a co-researcher, You got my number.
I need not to be sick and have longer days. I'll tell you, I've been traveling so much and speaking so much that, you know, it gets me away from the desk, and I've got these things to do. I've had articles coming on that, but literally, the World Wildlife Fund, which is one of the top three radical, most powerful environmental groups in the world, working directly under the UN and its UN environmental program, is literally in control of the American beef industry now. This is an organization that said, in order to save the world, we've got to stop beef consumption. And they have created the Global Sustainable Beef Roundtable. And the way they've done this is they have gotten control of the packing companies, Tyson's, Cargill. There's one called JBS. I forget what the fourth one's called. But these are the guys that actually have the market for beef. They have the grocery stores, the places where it's sold. The cattlemen don't have the market. The cattlemen have the packers. Well, what they have done with this Global Beef Sustainable Roundtable is they have put all kinds of regulations on how the beef is to be raised. Never mind that we've got cattlemen who are, you know, fifth generation doing this, who've provided all these years, and the United States has the highest quality of beef in the world. Never mind any of that. These guys who live in high rises in New York City and call themselves environmentalists know much better. And so they put these rules and regulations on, and if a cattleman does not follow those rules, is not certified by these packers, then they will not take their product. And we are seeing all kinds of cattlemen put out of business doing this. Now, there was a new packer that was started by some people who were in support of the cattlemen, and I was told they put together just the highest quality operation they could do, and were going to offer a much stronger, much better product. And what did these packers like Cargill and Tyson's do? They lowered their prices to the point where no one could compete, and they put these guys out of business. So the cattlemen are an absolute prisoner of this. And what's amazing, you know, part of the power behind all this is the animal rights movement that keeps painting this picture of, you know, be vegan, don't eat meat, you know, and that sort of thing. And they'll run these photographs of, you've seen the pictures of like the chickens that are in these chicken farms where they never touch the ground. They are just forced as slaves to produce those eggs, and the same kind of thing, you know, with the cattle and so forth. Well, the truth of the matter is, these policies are putting the real cattlemen out of business, the independent guys, the ones who love their you know, what they do, and they take good care of their cattle.
And cattlemen. We got to take care of them, too.
Yeah, right. And you know, they're pushing them into these factory farms. This is where the horror takes place, where nobody cares about the animal.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, this is a convoluted thing about it. And but when you have an organization who is behind all this that has said we've got to stop beef consumption to save the planet, and they're making this decision. I ask one of the gentlemen, you may know him, Debbie Bill Bullard, on, you know, why are the cattlemen allowing this to happen?
Mm-hmm.
The cattlemen's associations are going along with this.
Yes.
And he said that they have been beaten up so badly by the environmentalists and the animal rights people that they thought, okay, if we put this word sustainable in there, how bad can that be? That'll be a pressure valve and get them off our back. They don't understand the goal is to put them out of business. They have already taken control of the chicken industry, the poultry industry. They've already taken control of the pork industry. Tyson's ships all of its chickens to China to be processed. Now, what are we starting to hear in the news? You're hearing a lot about people getting sick eating chicken. Why? because it's coming from China. And, you know, this is what we deal with. This is one of the ploys to get you to stop eating these products. People are getting sick from that. We better not do that.
Yep.
And the first thing they did was to start this process was to take the sticker, the labeling of nation of origin off the labeling so that we don't know where it's coming from.
Yeah. You know, I can tell you that we just had to work our cows this weekend, and we have old cows. We don't take our cows being the mom, to market. They're born on our ranch, and they usually die on our ranch, our cows, the mom cows. And so over the last couple of days, you might have seen a couple of dead cows on our ranch. And somebody could easily drive by. And these cows live, you know, for 16 years.
Your
which
video
is
fodder.
16, 17 years. These cows are old. They're like over 100 years old. But they're surviving for so long because we take care of our animals. We love our animals. We take care of our land. But you know what? Anybody could come by and take pictures and say, look how these cattle ranchers are operating. Their cows are dead. Without doing any further investigation, and they could, and this happens all over, Tom, and they're even using drones now to, you know, spy.
Well, look what they did. They overran those people in England, and with the piglets, remember? They hugged they grabbed all the little piglets and put them with the wrong moms, and so a bunch of them got eaten, and they trampled other ones, and they were animal rights activists there to save the piglets, but a whole bunch of them died.
Well, the animal rights movement is the biggest con in the entire sphere of what we're talking about here.
And so connected, sorry, Tom, so connected, like Humane Society of the United States, so connected to lobbying for politicians.
Yeah, Humane Society of the U.S. has absolutely no animal shelters. They do absolutely nothing to you know, improve the life of animals and so forth. What they do is confiscate animals of by other people, and then they sell them. This is one of the major places they make money. They are thieves. They sell the animals from that they confiscate, and they move in and get the you know, the city dog catcher and, you know, the city government to go along with them, and you know, the judges are in their pocket and everything else. These are the biggest crooks there are, and of course PETA has one animal shelter, and that has the highest kill rate of any animal shelter in America. So this is your animal rights movement. And
on your site, do you have some research on that people can go to?
We've done some stories on there. My vice president, Kathleen Marcourt, originally had an organization called Putting People First. It was the first organization ever started against the animal rights movement. And let me tell you, she had to be armed all the time. She had to teach her kids to look under the car before they started it.
Yeah.
You know, things like they were in danger all the time.
Well, they always
by the
say that
animal
the,
rights movement.
The environmentalists that go completely wacko move over to over to animal rights.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But we've got a few things, I think, on there, but she's done quite a bit, and she has a book that she wrote back at that time called Animal Scam, and we have that available as well.
Well, I can't wait for your roundtable, Global Beef Roundtable Sustainable. I can't even remember the whole name because it makes me sick to my stomach. But I know that every time I go to a store like Whole Foods, it's right smack. You know, they've got levels to 4, I think, of how sustainable that food is.
Mm. That's the first thing I won't buy. It's more expensive, and they try to make sustainable and organic is kind of the same thing, and it's not. And it's a destruction of industries and so forth. I do want to talk about the Green New Deal, but I want to share the raw
green gangrene ugly old deal. It's not new. It's old.
Yeah. But let me share two quotes with you. I'm talking about private property as being the center of this whole thing. We all know a New York City Mayor, William de Blasio, And, you know, the guy is an absolute communist. Just no question about it. If you're in New York City, get out now while you still can. But he made this comment to New York Magazine last year in an interview. He said, "What's been hardest is the way our legal system is structured to favor private property. I think people all over the city of every background would like to have the city government be able to determine which building goes where, how high it will be, who gets to live in it, what the rents shall be." There you have it. It is exactly where they're headed with this.
Yeah.
And what they're doing with rent control and so forth, they're moving to get rid of private landlords, and the goal is to have all housing be government housing. The attack on in Minneapolis and other places around the country, in Oregon, on zoning for single-family homes. Now they're calling it racist to have a single-family home because these people are segregating themselves from the rest of the population. That's one of the things they do. Now, here is the clicker to this whole thing. We found this quote quite by accident one day. This is a quote written in 1968 by an architect. And now, you know, if you go to these city council meetings and stuff, you'll hear them talking about their comprehensive plan, and they'll use these terms. You know, well, we can't have chaotic growth. We need to have an organized system to prepare for the future.
Of course,
right? We hear that all the time. Well, here is this quote. It says, "The chaotic growth of cities will be replaced by a dynamic system of urban settlement. The region is formed by an economic interdependence of its development from the industrial complex to the industrial region. The region has a single system of transportation, a centralized administration, and a united system of education and research."
Welcome to the 21st century.
Written in 1968 by Alexei Gutanov, a Soviet Russian writing in a book entitled The Ideal Communist City.
Oh, wow.
Yep. That is exactly where we're headed with this. It's what it's about, and where they, you know, what they plan. One of the good things about what's happening now, I can't say good, that's not the right word to use for it, but I'm finding it a positive force for us. After all these years of them using this language that was so innocent sounding and hidden the truth of what they were saying, and of course guys like myself and others were interpreting what those innocent sounding words meant, and we're getting awarded the tinfoil hats, they have gotten so arrogant in what they're doing. I think it's a combination of arrogant and fear. They're arrogant because they've moved so forward with it. They're afraid because people are starting to catch on. But they have gotten very open about what they're talking about.
That's actually become kind of helpful.
Yeah, I have.
Hold on 5 seconds, Tom. We've got to take a really quick break here. We're a teeny bit late, but I had this song I just couldn't pass up that... We were just having trouble getting
you. It's dedicated to you.
It's all you.
So
you're an inspiration.
It.
All right. Sing it, Weird Al. Or not. Oh, yeah.
Just eat it. Don't want to argue. I don't want to debate. Don't want to hear about what kind of food you hate. You won't get no dessert till you clean off your plate. So eat it. Don't you tell me you're full. Just eat it.
Every breath you take, every move you make.
pick up where we left off when you were so unceremoniously gone.
I'm guessing like you, Tom. So we have Tom DeWeese, an amazing private property rights defender for over 30 years. The American Policy Center is where you can go. Extraordinary information on everything from Agenda 21 to water rights, private property rights. You know, you name it. Tom is just a master at putting together these big deals and that are, you know, these big agendas and putting it down to a simpler, like, I hate to use the term dumbing it down, but I'm just going to say dumb it down to where the average person can actually get what is the agenda and how it's impacting you and your everyday life. And Tom, I'm guessing, like you, like me, I was so excited that Alexandria O'Communist came out with this thing called the New Green Deal.
Well, when I was speaking in Minnesota a couple weeks ago, I started each of my talks telling the audience that I was really excited because this young lady has been able to do more to get people to start talking about and understanding the horrors of Agenda 21. She's done more in 2 months' time than I've done in 27 years, and I'm so grateful for her. And what I wanted to do was award her a copter beanie that take the tinfoil off my hat and put on hers, and it's copter beanie because, well, it is environmentally correct because it is wind-powered with a little propeller on top. And so I'm hoping to present her with this award sometime soon, because she has made it so much easier now. The truth of the matter is that going to a city council today, instead of immediately getting in and talking about Agenda 21, saying the words Green New Deal, now they can't say this is a something we made up, a conspiracy theory. It's a a congressional bill, and so it's right there. So that's made it a little bit easier. And the thing is that every single thing in this in the Green New Deal is from Agenda 21. There's nothing new in there. They've just gone into a little more detail. But I'll tell you something that I'm very concerned about. I see. After that vote in the Senate the other day, 57 to nothing, a whole bunch of Republicans and even some conservative groups in D.C. and stuff that are dancing around saying, ha, 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 take that, AOC. Look what we did to your Green New Deal. Ha, ha, ha. And they're celebrating 57 to nothing. Well, I think they've been played, because what they did with this, and she certainly is not the person who wrote this thing up. She's a tool, and they know she's a tool, and they got her in there to be a tool. But what they did was a classic maneuver in negotiation. They took a plan and put it so far radical, so far down the road, and the other side says, oh my goodness, no, we can't do all that. We can do this. Bingo.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's starting to happen. I don't have the name in front of me now, but there is a Republican senator who is now introducing the Green New Deal light.
Yeah, you know,
victory.
And you're just reconfirming what a guest, Mark Morano, was talking about, which there are, he named three different Republicans, Lindsey Graham, Mitt Romney, and he couldn't remember the other Republican, who are coming up with a Green New Deal light plan.
There you go. Yep.
Of course.
Yeah. So this is, they've been played. This is what happens all the time. And one of the things that I have been furious about for years, I've kept my mouth shut a lot about it. I don't want to shut any doors. But there are organizations, established organizations in Washington that are working on the climate change issues and so forth. They will not say the words Agenda 21.
Yeah.
If they had done that, in 1992, we could have killed this.
Yep.
If they had attacked it and said what it was really about. Instead, they let people like me carry the burden.
Yeah.
And I lost the ability to be on certain stages and being in certain publications and so forth because I'm the nutcase talking about this. And it's interesting that Senator from Utah...
Mike Lee.
Mike Lee, thank you. How can I forget three words, three letters? Anyway, you know, he made a lot of headlines making a speech on the floor of the Senate ridiculing the Green New Deal, making real fun of it.
Uh-huh.
If a senator had done that in 1992 against Agenda 21, we could have killed it.
Well,
instead,
you know,
they all played the game.
It's like Joni Ernst. Remember when she was running for senator?
Oh, yeah.
It was a Tea Party candidate who was talking about Agenda 21. And after Obama's, when they do their big speech, their State of the Union.
Yeah,
State of the Union.
She had a chance to rebuttal. And what did she talk about? Bread bags on her feet as she walked to school. Instead of having the world stage and talking about radical environmentalism, we heard about her being a poor farmer with bread bags on her feet as she walked to school.
I lived in West Hartford, Connecticut, and I put bread bags on our feet. We all did, because that's how you kept your boots from leaking. You did bread bags, socks. Everyone knows
but,
that.
You know, Tom, I hear your frustration, and there's so many opportunities to expose it. Right now, they could be saying, hey, you guys, this is no new deal. Nancy Pelosi in 1992 created H. Conrad 353, which, you know, was the bill to implement Agenda 21 in her own words, in her pretty little red dress. That's why I call her the woman in the pretty little red dress. Which is that video, as you know, Tom and Aaron, is still on C-SPAN.
On my website.
Your website. So people go to Tom's
AmericanPolicy.org, by the way.
Right now, and check out that video.
Yeah. Well, you know, when they introduced Agenda 21, you know, there were 50,000 delegates at this conference in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. 50,000, including almost every world head of state, George H.W. Bush, for one. And, I mean, that is not a picnic where we all got together just to enjoy ourselves. They had a purpose. And you know, there were diplomats, there were, and these NGO organizations, 50,000 of them. And when they announced this with great pride, with great excitement, they said, this is a comprehensive blueprint for the reorganization of human society.
Hello.
Think about
that. Yeah, that should be a massive heads up for people.
Yeah, I use it all the time, but, you know, that's what it was. And later, to really describe what they meant by this, they put this out. The UN put this out. It said, effective execution of Agenda 21 will require a profound reorientation of all human society unlike anything the world has ever experienced.
Wow.
You know, these are their
and
words.
On that note, our guest has been Tom DeWeese with the American Policy Center. Tom, we have run out of time. Can you believe it?
What a bummer.
That's why we do a two-hour show.
American
so if you'll
Policy
have to come back
Center.
On, we'll just yammer on forever.
Yeah, Tom, thanks for your work.
You can find all the information at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll have the archive up later on today. Thanks so much,
Tom. Amazing hero.
Thank you. All right.